Please help me welcome our speaker tonight, Katie from York, Pennsylvania.
Hi, my name's Katie and I'm an alcoholic. I probably don't even need the microphone, I'm so freaking loud. I have a sobriety date, it's April 10th of 2005. I have a sponsor, I am a sponsor, I have a home group. It's the Fourth Dimension Group of Alcoholics Anonymous in York, Pennsylvania. We meet on Tuesday night at 7:30. It's a one-hour speaker meeting just like this. And I'm going to do exactly what I was taught. I'm going to tell you what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like today. And I grew up in the City of Champions. I grew up in Pittsburgh. And I lived in Philadelphia for like the past, well, I live in York now, but for 5 years I lived in Philadelphia. And I was a very unpopular speaker. But I grew up in Pittsburgh, and I grew up in an absolutely fantastic house. Can you guys hear me? It's like freaking me out. I grew up in a fantastic house. I have two parents. They're still married to each other. They've been married to each other for like 35 years. They're really good people, man. I have two younger brothers. They're completely normal human beings. My parents taught us all the stuff that parents teach kids, right? They taught them not to lie, not to cheat, not to steal, to do what's right, to help people less fortunate than us. They taught us all of that stuff. I had absolutely everything that I needed, and I would have had everything that I wanted, but I'm incredibly selfish. That's impossible, so I didn't. But I tell you guys this for one reason and one reason only, not so you can be super hyped for me that I grew up in a good house. I tell you this because the first time I went to inpatient rehab, I sat in a small group, man, and I heard all these people share really terrible things that happened to them whenever they were kids. I didn't have one of those things. I wanted one of those things, as twisted up as that is. I wanted something to, like, blame my actions and my alcoholism on so bad. I was, like, tempted to make something up because I wanted to not look different and I wanted to have something, some reason that I destroyed everybody's life around me so bad, and I didn't. So I discounted myself from Alcoholics Anonymous. I discounted myself from you guys because I didn't have any of those things. And only to find out through years more drinking that none of those things made me those people drunk. And not having those things did not deem me non-alcoholic. From the time I was a little kid, I was weird, man. I don't know if it was a predisposition to alcoholism. I don't know what it was, but I was weird. From the time I was a little kid, I was absolutely driven by fear. I could have never, ever told you that that's what it was. But I remember being in elementary school, and I would sit there all day. I was too scared to, like, raise my hand and ask the teacher to go to the bathroom because I was mortified. I didn't want to walk in front of all the other kids. I didn't have to want to talk in front of them. If I had to get up, like, if it was a dire emergency, I would just die. I would be like, oh, my God, they're all talking about me. They're all thinking about me. So I would sit there all day. I would have to pee so bad, and I wouldn't ask to go to the bathroom, and I would just die slowly in my little chair until school would let out for the day, and I would run home from school like a freaking maniac because I had to pee so bad. From the time I was a little kid, I had a head that absolutely annihilated me. I would go to fall asleep at night, and it would feel like that was the first time my head woke up that day, and I would think about conversations that were never going to happen. I'd be like, all right, I'm going to say this to her tomorrow, and I'm not going to say this to him, and I hate her, so this is how I'm going to treat her, and then this is what I would think about for hours, and I would lay in my bed, and I'd be like, all right, if I fall asleep right now, I'll get 4 hours and 34 minutes of sleep. If I fall asleep right now, I'll get 2 hours and 37 minutes of sleep. And I would go wake my mom up, and I'd be like, Mom, I can't sleep. And she'd be like, honey, what's wrong with you? And I'm like, I can't stop thinking. And she'd be like, Katie, we'll just stop. And I'm like, no shit. I would have done that 4 hours ago if I could. I had absolutely no control over my brain, over my thinking, over how I felt, over any of that. I was a victim to the world and to my thinking. From the time I was a little kid, I was never enough of anything. I was never pretty enough. I was never smart enough. I was never good enough at sports. I was never good enough at art. I was never good enough. Nobody on the outside of Katie ever told me that. They always told me, Katie, you can do whatever you want with your life. You're beautiful. You're this. And I knew they were lying to me. I knew it. I would watch my little brothers, my two little brothers, who are normal human beings, right? And I would watch them, like, they both played ice hockey, and they had all these friends, and I would watch them interact with these people, and I wanted what they had. I wanted what they had so bad, and I didn't know what it was, but I wanted it. I would have done anything for it, I started drinking whenever I was 14 or 15 years old, and I found it. I found freedom, and I don't remember my first drink, nor do I think whenever I was 14 or 15 years old, I realized what I had happened upon, you know. But I will never, ever forget the effects that alcohol produced for somebody like me. Alcohol was the first thing that I had ever found in my itty-bitty life that that was powerful enough to relieve me from the bondage of my head. It was the first thing that I had ever found, that made me free. I grew up in this part of Pittsburgh. It was like one of the wealthiest suburbs of Pittsburgh, and we weren't wealthy at all. Like, the other kids got like BMWs to drive, and I got a pedal bike when I turned 16. Like, we didn't have money. And I was like, oh my God, if I could feel like any more of a loser. And, you know, I always thought that that's what separated me from you. But alcohol proved that wrong, because I didn't need money. I didn't need anything. I was enough, and that's what alcohol did for me. It didn't make me prettier. It didn't make me smarter. It just made me enough. It just made me be able to see eye to eye with you, and that's exactly what I wanted. And, you know, whenever I was in high school, I would start to pay some little consequences for my drinking. I got suspended from school, and, like, that's fine. Like, that's totally fine. I didn't want to be in school anyways. And, like, all the really cool kids were getting suspended from school. So I was, like, hyped to get suspended from school. And I would just sit at home, because both my parents worked full-time jobs, and I would drink their liquor in their cabinet. They had, like, 8 bottles of Seagram 7. I don't know why 2 humans would ever buy too much of that foul substance, but they did. And I drank it. And I would fill the bottles back up with water, and I would drink it absolutely any chance I got. And so whenever I would get suspended from school, I would sit there and I would drink with my little friends who would skip school. And whenever I was in high school, I would also get terminally grounded. I was, like, terminally grounded. And I saw nothing wrong with that either. I was like, all right, man, that's cool. I'll sit in my room and drink by myself. And I was more free that way than I was even hanging out with you. And, you know, I don't know, man, none of those things were, you don't understand. Like, I guess you do, right? Like, what I just found, like, hi. None of those things were powerful enough to separate me from alcohol, you know. And so anyway, I got the choice to go to college or get a full-time job, and I will, you know, I of course chose to go to college. And the way that I picked the college that I went to, it was in the Pittsburgh paper as the biggest party school in the nation, and I was like, right on, man, that's where I need to be. And I had no dreams or aspirations of a higher education at all. Like, when my mom asked me whenever I was a little kid what I wanted to be whenever I grew up, I told her I wanted to marry somebody in the mob. And that's literally what I told her. And she was like, oh my God, like, what is wrong with you? Like, I had no aspirations, like, at all. And, you know, so whenever I went to school, I went to West Virginia University, and there were a ton of hippies there. And when you put somebody like me around a whole brand new group of people, I become whatever you are. I wear what you wear. I talk what like you talk. I like what you like. And I did. I went to WVU, and I became a hippie. There were a bunch of hippies there. I love the hippies. I still love the hippies. They introduced me to the Velvet Underground and Bob Dylan. I wore little bell-bottom pants and Grateful Dead tie-dyes. I tried to go on tour with Phil and friends. They didn't want me either. And I loved the hippies. But it didn't matter. If you were a homie, then so was I. I would pull my pant leg up. I had no idea what that meant. I would turn my little hat to the side, and I would listen to Tupac and Bone Thugs and Harmony with you. I'm old. And that's what we listen to. And, you know, whenever I was first getting sober, my sponsor would ask me bizarre questions like, Katie, what do you like to eat? And I would say, Karen, I like whatever you like. And she's like, no, dude, for real, like, what do you like to eat? And I'm like, I have no idea. I had no idea. And or like one of the 3 times she wasn't making me listen to a speaker CD in her car, she would say, Katie, what kind of music do you like to listen to? And I would be like, I like whatever you like. And she's like, no, like, that's so bizarre. Like, what kind of music? And I had no clue. I mean, now I know, but I'm 12 years sober. I better know, you know what I mean? And, you know, so I went down there and I became a hippie, man. And I had a great time. I will tell you guys this. I had so much fun drinking. I am an alcoholic and Alcoholics Anonymous that is so grateful that I got to live that life. I feel like it's such a gift, you know what I mean? And, you know, I had so much fun drinking in high school. I had more fun drinking in college. And so anyway, whenever I was in college, that's the first time that I remember coming to from a blackout. I came to in like a snowdrift on the side of the road, and never was I like I need to really reevaluate my life. I was like, right on, man, where'd my friends go? And that's what I did. I looked for them, and we got it in. And, you know, I was in school for 2 semesters, and I got a letter in the mail that said I had a 0.7 grade point average and that I was on academic probation. And whenever I'm faced with failure, I'll just go ahead and quit. Thank you very much. I don't need you to tell me I'm a failure. I didn't need West Virginia University to tell me if I'm a failure. I already know that. And what I did is I go back to my parents' house. And I'll tell you guys what, like, if there was somebody that could have been loved sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, those 2 people would have loved me sober. They let me run rampant through their lives. And I went back to my parents' house, and if there was like a line to be stepped across into my alcoholism, this is whenever I believe I stepped across that imaginary line. And you know, I went back to my parents' house, and I was no longer drinking because it was a party, I was hanging out with my friends, or it was fun. I was drinking to overcome a mental obsession that was beyond my control. I was drinking because I would come 2 a.m. and the pain of the past hurt so bad. What I had to do to get a drink the day before hurt so bad that I had to drink to make it stop. I was drinking because I would come 2 a.m. and my head would annihilate me until I would take a drink to make it stop. And I no longer had a choice. I drank whether I wanted to or not. And this is what would happen. I would steal my parents' checks, and I would write their checks out to myself until they would go to write checks to pay their bills, and they would bounce, and they would say, you know, what's going on, man? And like I said, I have these 2 younger brothers, and one of them is, like, disgustingly responsible. He's still so responsible, it makes me want to vomit. Like I said, we didn't grow up with a lot of money, so, like, the kid wanted to go to college, so he saved up all his money from, like, Christmases and birthdays and everything to put himself through college. And I borrowed his ATM card one day. He handed it to me and let me borrow it and gave me his PIN, and I just needed $40. I just needed to not be sick anymore. And I drained his account. I took every penny he saved to go to college. And then here's what would happen. My parents would say, Katie, what the hell's wrong with you? You need to get help, or you need to get the hell out of our house. And I would say, see you later. And I would go stay with these people that I thought were much worse off than me. They smelled worse than me. They showered less often than me. I thought they were doing worse things than me. And I would stay with them, and I would last 2 or 3 days, and I would steal their guns, and I would sell them, and I would steal their DVDs, and I would sell them, and I would put myself in situations that no young girl should ever put herself in situations like that. And they would say, Katie, what the hell's wrong with you? You got to get out of here. And this is what I would do. I would call my mom, and I'd be like, Mom, I'm homeless, and I'm your only daughter, and I'm going to die out here. And if I die out here, it's going to be because you kicked me out. And I'm going to die on the streets alone. And she would say, Katie, I am so sorry. Please come home. And I would say, okay, and I go home. And eventually what happened is I got backed into a corner to go to my first rehab. I stole a car and some kid's mom's credit card, and if it's either like jail or rehab, I don't jail well, so I will always choose rehab. Rest assured, I didn't like hotwire the car. I stole the keys, okay? I'm like not that good of a criminal. I wish I was. I went to my first rehab, man, and in that first rehab, I wasn't one of you. I didn't want to hear absolutely anything that any of those people had to say to me. I'll tell you guys this, I thought I was, like, super hot the first time I went to rehab. I wasn't. I was, like, disgusting. I weighed 78 pounds. My little size 0 pants were hanging off me. My skin was like some bizarro color between yellow and gray. It looked like I had been punched in both of my eyes, but I wasn't. They were just that way. And I refused to shower. My mom told me that all she wanted for Mother's Day was for me to please take a shower. But I was like, look at my hip bones sticking out. I looked like a freaking supermodel. So that's what I thought. So I went to my first rehab, and I wanted to gain some weight. And I wanted to stay there for a couple days, and I wanted to come out, and I wanted to drink like a lady, because that's what rehab's supposed to do. I never, ever drank like a lady. Ever. Not once. But rehab was going to do that for me. And whenever I want nothing to do with anybody in rehab, is what I do is I locate the sickest, cutest boy I can find, and I make him my boyfriend. And that's what I did. I found 2 sick, cute boys in rehab. I made them both my boyfriends. I left rehab early because I was in my aunt's wedding, and it was imperative that I be there. Nobody cared that I was there, but that's what I told them. And they gave me my little chip, and I went on my merry way. And I drank the day I got out of rehab with one of the 6 cute boys. I'm sure you're all very surprised. What happens to me when I drink is not what happens to a normal person. I'm allergic to alcohol. I have a physical allergy to alcohol. This is a super bizarre analogy, but I guess you have to listen to it. I'm also allergic to cats. My mom, man, she's not allergic to cats. She gets around cats and, like, nothing happens. I get around cats and I have an abnormal reaction to cats, just like alcohol. I get around cats, I break out in hives, my lips swell up, I sneeze. It's, like, a really bad time. Much like that, my mom's not allergic to alcohol. She drinks a half a glass of wine and goes to bed next to my father, whom she's been married to for 35 years, and then goes to work the next day. It's really weird. And I take a drink of alcohol, and I just all of a sudden start drinking until I black out, and then I can't find my car for 2 weeks. Or I take a drink of alcohol, and uh-oh, I just shot cocaine and heroin for 2 weeks. Or I take a drink of alcohol, and I drink so much I black out and I roll over in the morning and I'm like, oh my gosh, it's so nice to meet ya. Any of those things happen, but me, you know, drinking and stopping does not. And so whenever I drink, whenever I get out of rehab, I absolutely cannot stop until something stops me. And around this time, my mom and I decided that the Pittsburgh was the problem and that the solution was the sunny state of Florida, so that's where I decided to move. And I have an aunt and uncle that live down there, and they were so gracious to have me in their home. And I went down there, and I stayed with them. And I'll tell you guys this. Before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, not drinking hurt really, really bad. It hurt worse than the consequences that I was paying from drinking most times. And, you know, I didn't drink for 3 days when I got down there, and it hurt so bad, like, I don't know if you know what I mean, but, like, it would hurt so bad that it felt like time was going backwards. I'm like, dude, 2 hours had to pass, and it was, like, 3.5 minutes. I'm like, oh, my God, this day is so long. And, you know, I called my mom after 3 days of sobriety down there, and I said to her, I'm like, yo, dude, you got to come get me. This place is awful. And she said to me, she was like, why? I'm like, I hate the sun. I wish it would rain. The humidity is making my hair frizzy. The old people are making right-hand turns from the left-hand lane. You've got to get me out of there. This place is terrible. And she said, Katie, you are in the most beautiful place on earth. Why is it that you can never be happy? And this is the first time I ever remember telling my mom that I don't know. I don't know. And, you know, I stayed down there 3 days, and then I got a job in the restaurant, and I found my people. I found you guys in Florida. And you know, I stayed down there for, like, 9 months, and I did the exact same thing to my family in Florida as I did to my family in Pittsburgh. I absolutely stole anything that wasn't nailed down, and I terrorized them until they couldn't take it anymore. My dad came down. My aunt called my dad and was like, yo, you got to come get her. We can't fix her either. And my dad came down to Florida and picked me up. And we went back to my parents' house. And I'll tell you guys this. So around this, whenever I got back from my parents' house, my mom has a sister, right, that's 15 years younger than her. And she was always the coolest. She's my Aunt Tammy. She was the coolest. She had a baby, and I wanted to go see her and the baby in the hospital. Before I got sober, man, like, I always wanted to be a good person. Like, I didn't want my mom to not invite me to Christmas. I didn't want my brothers to tell their friends that I stunk and to stay away from me because I would steal their money. I didn't want that. I wanted them to be proud of me. I wanted nothing more in the world than my dad to tell me that he was proud of me. That's all I wanted. And I asked my mom once, I'm like, yo, dude, like, why doesn't he ever say he's proud of me? And she said, because you do absolutely nothing to ever be proud of. And I was like, oh, my God, I literally have never asked her that again. And, you know, not to this day. And I wanted to be a good daughter, and I wanted to be a good sister, and I didn't want to steal, and I didn't want to terrorize their lives. And, like, there came a point, man, where, like, I didn't even want to drink anymore. I just didn't have a choice. I had to. And, you know, I wanted to go show up for my aunt and my niece in the hospital this day so bad. And but I had to drink up the courage to face my family. Like, I couldn't go there sober. I thought back then, like, if I went there sober, one of them was going to look me in the eyes, and I thought you could see then. I thought you could see the disgusting, rotten person that I was on the inside. I thought you could see every dollar I stole from you. I thought you could see all of that stuff, and I couldn't go there. My skin would crawl. And so I went to drink up the courage to face my family, man, and you know, I'll give you guys a little disclaimer. I've been arrested before. It's really no big deal. I'm never going to pay that fine. I'm never surrendering my license. I'm never, ever seeing a probation officer. Like, it's really not a big deal, you know? But this day was a little bit different. I was sitting on the side of the road in this part of Pittsburgh that I stuck out a little, And I was so sick, man. Like, I was so, so physically sick. Like, I will never forget how physically sick I was that day from withdrawing from alcohol. And I was waiting for my buddy to come back to the car, and task force pulled up. And my natural reaction to fear is to run. It still is today. I just have a little bit of a pause now, you know. But that day I had no pause and I had no sponsor. So the task force officer pulled up and he got out of the car, and I took off. And I had this car that was kind of like a little go-kart. It was like an itty-bitty Honda Civic with a hatchback. Mm-hmm. So I take off. I'm sure it's making the noise of a lawnmower, you know what I mean? I take off, and apparently I almost ran the task force officer over. I don't remember that part, but I'm sure the gentleman's telling the truth. And he had to get up off the ground into his car, and he was behind me like 30 seconds later. If I can explain to you what kind of terrible criminal I was running from the police in second gear. I had a 5-speed. I was literally going 30 miles an hour. I might have been walking from the police, and I would have been doing just as good of a job. I pulled over a mile later because it was obvious I wasn't getting anywhere. And the kind officer got his gun out and he got me out of the car. And he put handcuffs on me and he threw me in some guy's front yard. The guy happened to be mowing his grass, and he mowed his grass right around me. Like, the lawnmower motor was like, and it was like, I was like in jail picking blades of grass out of my hair. I'm like, just when you think the suck can't suck anymore, oh, it does. I never, ever thought or knew that day was going to be a day to remember, you know, for the rest of my life. I was 23 years old whenever I got sober, and I wanted nothing to do with Alcoholics Anonymous. I wanted nothing to do with God. I wanted nothing to do with anything. I was 23 years old, and I wanted to die, and that's it. And I wish that I could express to you in words how badly I wanted to die at that point in my life, but I can't convey that message through words. I wanted it so bad. I hated God. I absolutely despised God. I made my confirmation whenever I was in the eighth grade, and I was like, right on, man. I lived my life like I was going to hell, and I might as well have a good time on the way there. And that was my motto, and that's how I live my life. I wanted nothing to do with any of this. I wanted to die. But there were some other plans for me. And what I believe whenever I look back on that day today is I believe that I was touched by the hand of God. And I believe the hand of God reached down to the ghetto without my consent and pulled me out. And because I have no other reason than I get to stand in front of you today except for that. They took me to jail, and I got to jail, and like 10 hours later when I got to make my phone call, I called my dad. My dad is my favorite person on the face of the earth. He is a short, fat, little Italian man. He looks like a little meatball with arms. He is the cutest human being in the world. My dad's the kind of guy I would be carrying their television out of the back of the house to pawn, and my dad would be chasing me down saying, Katie, here's $5. Please just eat. Don't tell your mom I gave you money. Please just get something to eat. That's my dad. So, like, of course, I'm going to call my dad. So I call my dad, and I'm like, yo, dad, it's Katie. Like, I'm in jail. And he said, I know, idiot. You ran from the police in my car. I forgot to tell you that part. It was his car. I didn't have anything. I essentially went from, like, high school to, like, 1 year of living in a dorm to homeless. I ran from them in, in his car. So he was like, I know, idiot. And I was like, so are you going to, like, come get me or what? And he was like, nah, dude. He's like, you know what, Kate, I'm going to be able to sleep tonight because I know you're not killing yourself. And he hung up on me. So I was quite sure that he had made a mistake, so I called him back. And I was like, hey, Dad, it's Katie. And he's like, yeah, I know. I'm like, I don't think you quite understand. Like, they're going to take me upstairs with the criminals. And he said Katie, I don't think you understand. You are a criminal, and hung up on me again. So I was like, well, it looks like I'm going upstairs. And I did. And they put me in the cell with this other lady that was detoxing. And this lady stood about this high, and she had hair down to here, and she didn't have one tooth in her mouth, and she had so many scabs on her body, she looked like she had scales. And she told me that she had been doing the things that I've been doing for 45 years. And my ego was smashed just for 1 second, because it's come back, trust me. But my ego was smashed just for 1 second, and I knew that I was no different than her in that moment, and I knew that I might not get to die. And something inside of me changed that had absolutely nothing to do with me. It had nothing to do with the prayer I said or any belief I had or anything. It had nothing to do with me. My parents came to pick me up a couple days later because I wouldn't stop calling their house collect, and I think they just thought it was cheaper to bail me out at this point. And so they did, and you know, they took me back to their house, and I went up in my bed there to feel sorry for myself because that was one of my best skills, with self-pity. And I laid down, and my dad came up, and my dad, my mom, like I told you, has been married to him since dirt, and she told me that the only day she's ever seen my father cry is the day that I was born. And my dad sat on my bed, and he started to cry, and he said, "Katie, I want you to know that whenever you're doing this, you're not just killing me, but you're not just killing you, but you're absolutely killing me." And I'll tell you what, I was always one of those drunks that was like, you got to pick your life, man. You got to make your choices. You go live your little pathetic 9 to 5 like the rest of the lemmings, and I'm going to go over here and do this. I'm not affecting you. I'm not hurting you. And my dad smashed that for me that day. And 10 days later, I voluntarily went to inpatient rehab. I never go to voluntarily to inpatient rehab. And I would never tell you that I was hyped to come to AA or anything like that, because I wasn't. I just said okay, and I went, and that was it. And I was still looking at the cute boys. I didn't have pure motives. I didn't have anything like that at all. They told me that I needed to go to a recovery house, and I told them that I would go to a recovery house if it was in Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, or New York City, because I'm an artist and I need to be around culture. And they told me that, being as though I was just in jail and then rehab, maybe my ideas weren't so good, and how about I listen to somebody else? And I said okay. And they sent me to the booming metropolis of York, Pennsylvania. You know, York's like a trick. I don't know if y'all have ever been there, but there's like this sign when you first get there, right? And it says, "Welcome to the city of York." And then there's no city. It's like really bizarre. Like, for the longest time, I couldn't figure it out. I'm like, is it a sign? Like, where is this friggin' city? And you know, they dropped me off at this recovery house. And whenever I was getting sober, man, I could experience two emotions, and that was it. They were fear and anger. And most of the time, I was scared and angry all at the same time. I couldn't laugh. Like, whenever I was real new, I would come to your meetings, and I'd be like, ha ha, because I didn't want you to know I was new, so I'd like fake laugh with you. And I couldn't cry. Like, I wasn't even human enough when I got here to fake a tear anymore, like at all. I remember sitting in rehab, and they had us like write our obituaries. And I remember these like big grown men crying. And I'm like, man up, loser. Like, what is your problem? I couldn't even cry anymore. I had nothing left in me. And they dropped me off at the recovery house that day, and I was scared and angry all at the same time. And I walked in, and there was a lady sitting in the corner with toilet paper wrapped around her head, and she was on the phone, and she nodded, and I'm like, oh my God, where did they drop me off at? Some other chick came down from upstairs, got crackers, was walking back upstairs, pointed at me, and was like, don't rat me out. And I was like, for what? Like, I don't even know the rules here. And the house president came in, and she's like, great, she's going to get drunk. And I was like, oh my God. Like, it's amazing to me today, because whenever I'm drinking, like, I will sleep in abandoned houses, I will sleep in parks, I will sleep with old dirty men. I do not care. But you let me get sober for 3 minutes, and I'm like, excuse me, my pillow's a little lumpy. I get these standards, and I don't know where they come from. But, I came down from rehab with this other girl that told me that there was an AA meeting around the corner in a half hour, and how about we go? And, like, absolutely anything that is good that has happened to me in my sobriety, I just said okay, and I went, and that was it. And it's also really funny who God used when I was getting sober. I suppose whoever I was willing to listen to. We went to that meeting in a half an hour, and one of the sick, cute boys I was checking out from rehab raised his hand and shared that he's a member of Alcoholics Anonymous and that he did a fourth and a fifth step here. And I knew he wasn't as miserable as he was 2 weeks ago, because I was watching him very closely. I talked to him after the meeting, and he told me that he had a sponsor here, and that his sponsor had a girlfriend who was also a member of AA, and he gave me her phone number. And I called her a couple days later, and she came and picked me up for a meeting. And ever since I met the members of Alcoholics Anonymous, I've been absolutely amazed by you. I never, ever came to AA before. I purchased drugs in your parking lot, and that's as close as I would get. I was like, I'm not going in there. I was amazed, and this girl made Alcoholics Anonymous so attractive for someone like me. You know, we sat down, and she told me what she was like, what happened, and what she was like today. And never did she lecture me, never did she yell at me, she didn't act better than me. She just, you know, was offering to, you know, hold my hand and walk down the path with her. And she said, Katie, if you want to do this thing, you always have a seat in my car. And if you don't, that's cool too. Hang on to my number. We can be friends. And that made AA attractive to someone like me. Mind you, I was later to meet my grand sponsor who would. There were lectures to endure. The big book is not telling the truth, you know, but my first sponsor, man, she made Alcoholics Anonymous so attractive. And, you know, she told me to go home and read the doctor's opinion. And whenever I'm first getting sober, first of all, it's really hard to read, right? Like, I couldn't, like, I felt like I was, like, trying to read a sentence, but, like, nothing was going into my brain. And then I would be ready to flip a page, and I'm like, I don't even know what that just said. Like, literally the whole page, I have no clue what it said. And, you know, so I read it, like, 5 times or, like, whatever. And, like, the doctor's opinion doesn't make it super easy either, because, like, what does the word altruistic mean? And who knows that before they come to AA? So I was trying to figure all that out, and I was sure that I had to have something to say here. I was sure that I had to sound smart, and, you know, we sat down the next day, and she assured me that she wanted to hear absolutely nothing that I wanted to say, and neither did the rest of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I kept my mouth shut, and because that's what I was taught. And I, you know, we sat down, and we went through the first 3 steps, and, like, I'll tell you guys this, like, man, like, I was given such a gift walking in here. Like, the 4th step wasn't what I was scared the most of. It was the 3rd step. I read it on the wall, and I was like, man, I am not turning my will and my life over to this thing that hates me, and I hate him. Like, and do I have to be a nun? Do I have to stop swearing? Like, I don't understand, like, this whole thing, you know? And God hates me, and I hate God, and, like, we're cool like that. And she made it so easy for someone like me to get sober. She said, Katie, all you have to do is start doing in your heart what you know to be right and to stop doing what you know to be wrong and make a decision to go on with the rest of the steps. And I could get with that. I could say okay to that. And so I did. And from there, my idea of God has grown and changed so much. And I'll tell you guys what, it needs to grow and change more all the time. My idea of God needs to get bigger all the time. And that's my goal here, you know. I sat down and I wrote my first 4th step, and it was 27 pages long front and back. And bless her heart, I was crazy. And she sat down and she listened to it. She listened to every single word of it. Never did she act bored. Never did she check her cell phone. Nothing seemed more important to her in that moment. And I still couldn't figure out why you guys wanted to help somebody like me, you know. And I was later to find out that, like, it's because we're the same. It's because that's what we do here. It's because we're all here on borrowed time. My time isn't mine anymore, you know. Well, I'll tell you guys this. I don't really know why I'm telling you this. I work in Maryland, so it took me 4.5 hours to get here from work, and that's why. That's why I'll drive still to this day 4.5 hours to get here to come hang out with you guys, because the time is not mine. It's not mine to hoard and watch Storage Wars, which is what I'm watching right now, or American Pickers. I, like, love these weird antique shows. And it is not mine. As much as I want to sit and do that and hang out with my pit bull, it's not mine. It's yours. That's why when a girl calls, I need to go, despite how my head's yelling at me to stay home, you know? Anyways, I digress. But that first 4th and 5th step, I'll tell you what it did for someone like me. Up until that point, I was in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was pretty excited to be here, but I felt really separate from you guys. I felt like I was almost watching Alcoholics Anonymous from behind this piece of glass. And I saw you guys interacting, but I just felt like I was still missing something. And the day I did that first 5th step with my first sponsor, that piece of glass came down, and I felt like I stepped into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was actually a part of it. And I was so excited. I've written many inventories after that. The most profound one was that I wrote it 1.5 years sober. I was 1.5 years sober, and I thought I should be better. My little mind told me that I should be better. And I actually remember to this day. So my home group was Harbor City Speakers Group in Baltimore, Maryland. And there were some epic old-timers there. And I remember them talking and sharing about their journey through sobriety. And I used to think to myself, like, I was, like, 9 months sober, and I'd be like, that is so sad for them that they are that sick. Like, that is so sad. Like, I just feel awful for them that they've had to do the steps this many times. Like, I did them once, and I feel great, and, like, man, I feel sorry for them. And 1.5 years sober, I knew what they were talking about, and I was crazy. I was, like, wired for sound. I was thinking so much I couldn't see straight, You know, my second sponsor had me write a fourth and a fifth step, and I saw Katie for exactly who and what I was. I saw Katie whenever I didn't have the thing of, but I was drinking to hold up against it. I got to see my alcohol, when I put the drink down, where my alcoholism starts, man. I got to see what kind of daughter I was, what kind of sister I was, what kind of friend I was. And I have never, ever wanted to do step 6 and 7 so badly before in my life. The first time I did step 6 and 7, they're a paragraph long in the big book. I read it. I sat up in my recovery house room, thought about myself and my new little boyfriend for 45 minutes, got on my knees and said the prayer, went outside and said the prayer because I thought I was closer to God there. And I was like, word, let's make some amends. And after I did that inventory at a year and a half sober, I never wanted to do step 6 and 7 so badly before in my life. My sponsor then told me to go read them out of the 12 and 12, and I read that this is the step that separates the men from the boys, and I was like, maybe I should have paid more attention to that the first time around. And, you know, step 6 and 7 are my favorite steps today, because I will tell you guys what, these past years I've been with you guys, I've tried to think my way into better living, I've tried to figure it out, I've tried to force myself to act right. And I do not, no matter how long I'm sober, have the necessary power to do so. What my sponsor today tells me is that I need to ask God to remove them and act as if He already has, and trust that He will. And so I want God to change me so much. And some of these guys remember me whenever I was more newly sober than I am now. And I am not the cowering girl that walked into Alcoholics Anonymous. Nor am I half the human that I think my God wants me to become. And so I'm somewhere on my way. And step 6 and 7 are going to be what helps mold me and take me there. And that's what I believe, man. So I keep seeking God, you know. And as far as amends, I got to make some really easy amends first. I made amends to my mom and my dad and my youngest brother, and they were like, word, we just wanted our daughter/sister back. And I'm like, these things are awesome. So I went to make amends to my brother who I stole that money from, right? And at this point, I had paid him back all the money already. And I went and I sat and made face-to-face amends to him. And at the end of the amends, I said, Derek, is there any way that I've harmed you that I'm unaware of? And he said, Katie, quite frankly, I think you're full of shit. You've been full of shit since I met you. That's since I've been 2 years old. And he said, you're going to have to show me that you're doing something different. And in these past years, I have tried to practice the principles that you guys taught me with this brother, right? When he was in college and would run out of money and stuff, I would send it and wouldn't expect it in return. I call him and ask him how he's doing and listen instead of blabbing on about me, because that's my natural instinct, right? I answer his calls when they were inconvenient for me to answer. And that same brother who told me that I stunk and that I would steal his money, 4 years ago asked me to be in his wedding, and the day that he got married, he said, Katie, I wouldn't rather have anybody up here with me today than you. And 2 years ago, when him and his wife had this awesome little boy, Joey, he asked me to be that little boy's godmother. So that's restored. Alcoholics Anonymous has restored that relationship. I called him yesterday for Father's Day, and he was just excited that I called him. And he's like, they just had another kid. Apparently they're just like having kids, but he's so weird because like he went to college and like met a girl in college and then like bought a house and then like got married to that girl and then got a dog and then had a kid and then is buying a bigger house and then is having another dog and he's never been fired or like anything. Isn't that weird? I'm like, oh my God, like can you do something wrong? So that relationship is awesome, man. It is absolutely awesome. And it's not because I'm special or I did anything right. It's because I listened to you. And that's why I get to have that, because I practice these principles there. Whenever I was first getting sober, I equated making amends with having stolen money from people, because there were just so many of them on their own. I didn't realize that, like, if you didn't steal, you may still have caused harm. I had this little grandma, man, and she started to get sick, and I started to get afraid that I did in fact owe her amends. So I was talking to my sponsor a lot about it, and we decided that I did in fact owe her amends, and I did cause her harm, and I needed to go home, and I needed to make amends to her. And so the whole drive back to Pittsburgh, I was thinking to myself, dude, this is going to be super easy. She's 78. I'm obviously her favorite grandkid. Like, what's she going to say to me? My thinking's always, like, very, very incorrect, but I still listen to it all the time. And I said, went back, and, you know, at the end of the amends, I said, Grandma, is there any way that I've harmed you that I'm unaware of? And for the next 45 minutes, that 78-year-old lady let me have it. She told me the exact nature of every wrong that I could and could not remember. I was like, this was the worst idea ever. And, you know, but I'll tell you guys what, I walked away from that amends with the biggest gift that I've been given in Alcoholics Anonymous. I walked away from that amends with the knowing in my heart that I did not drink my way into Alcoholics Anonymous, that I don't deserve to sit here, and that I did not earn a seat here, that I get to be in Alcoholics Anonymous because women of faith prayed for me. Women like my grandma and my mom who believed in a God their entire lives when I was too much of a coward to do so myself. And, you know, a couple years later, my mom called me and told me that that hospice had been called in and I needed to go home and I needed to say goodbye to my grandma. And because of you guys, I got to do that. And I went in there and I got to hold her hand and she couldn't sit up anymore and she couldn't open her eyes. I don't even know if she knew that I was there. But because of you guys, I got to hold my grandma's hand and I got to tell her that she was my hero. And I got to thank her for saving my life because I believe that's exactly what she did. And you know, my grandma passed away and I got to be there and I got to make it not about me at all. I just got to go there and be a service. And I got to be there for my mom who lost her mom. I still have some amends that I need to make. I have people that still, this many years later, want nothing to do with my amends, and that's okay, you know. I make new amends all the time, it's so funny because my sponsor now, I'm like, when can I stop making amends? She's like, when you stop acting like an idiot. I'm like, okay, some things never change, I learn things all the time, and I'm excited to make amends today. I'm excited to make amends where I can. Sometimes they're very, very humbling. But I will make them when they're due. As far as steps 10, 11, and 12, man, these are the steps that the old timers taught me that I need to live in, and they're not to be used as maintenance steps. They're to be used as growth steps, and that's what I tried to do. You know, as far as step 11, these people that I got sober with practiced all these crazy forms of meditation. We meditated the bells. I was always the one with, like, one eye open to make sure everybody else was closing their eyes because I felt so awkward. I was, like, never good at that stuff. I'll tell you guys what always worked for me, what exactly is written in the big book on pages 86 through 88. That works for me every single time. I do it consistently. And so that's what I do my best to do today. Do I do it every day? Absolutely not. I want to. I really want to. And so I need to start taking that action. You know, and as far as helping girls, I've got to help so many girls in Alcoholics Anonymous, not because I do it right, not because I'm awesome, not because I'm loud, which I am, but I get to help them because there's just so many women, and not that many women that stay sober in Alcoholics Anonymous that stay part of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and there's a ton of recovery houses in York, you know, there's 86 of them, so, like, of course, there's a lot of new girls to help, and you know, that's part of what I was talking about earlier with the borrowed time stuff. A little bit about what my life is like today. I have everything material that I ever wanted, or that I didn't want, to be quite honest with you. Like I told you guys, like, I was excited to get stuff in sobriety because I didn't have anything. Like, I never, like, lost, like, a house or I never even had an apartment before I got here, you know? And my fiance and I own a home. I have a fiance. He, like, really wants to marry me most days, I think. He's awesome, I have a dog. She's a rescue pit bull. She's insane, and I love her. She's human aggressive, just like me, and it's great. I have an awesome job. I run a multi-million-dollar business, which is really, really cool, and I can't believe they let me do that. You know, I have codes to safe, like, and, you know, it's just bizarre. I was the one that was, like, taking straps of 20s out of safes that I had codes to before, and now they're freely giving them to me. So, like, all that material stuff was given to me in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have two girls that I lived in the recovery house with, and all three of us are still sober 12 years later, and we're all still really good friends, you know? I've been given absolutely everything material that I would ever want. I have a car, I have everything. But none of that is what makes me happy here. Not all of that stuff I love and I cherish it, but the happiest I ever was in AA is whenever I was living in the recovery house walking to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous because I didn't have anything that I got sober. That's the most free I felt ever, I think, to be honest with you. And I had nothing standing in my way. And, you know, I have a good life today. We lived in Philadelphia. My fiance was getting a engineering degree, which is really crazy. He's one of us, too. And who's like, he actually got sober. This was his first home group, right? Yeah, he actually got sober here. And he went back to school, and he's an engineer, convicted felon engineer now. I'm like, how weird. We can literally do anything. And he, like, designs stuff, and I don't know. He tries to show me what he's doing, and I'm like, I'm not that smart. But I have an art degree. So I'm obviously not that intelligent. And, you know, we have a really good life. And, but I'll tell you guys what, whenever I was first getting sober, I would hear these people get up to the podiums in AA and well-intentioned people and talk about how awesome their lives are today. And things would happen to me in my sobriety, and I felt like I was doing it wrong because bad things were happening. And I'll tell you guys this, my sobriety has not been a gold-paved road to happy destiny. It has not at all. I've had things happen to me that were beyond my control. Every grandparent that I have died has passed away since I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous. My place of business has been robbed. My house has been robbed. My car has been robbed. I'm a friggin' robbery magnet. You know, I've lost friends, I've gained friends, I've lost relationships, I've gained relationships. I'll tell you guys this, my sponsor who sponsored me for 11 years, she had 17 years sober, told me she drank 2 months ago. Things happen in Alcoholics Anonymous. Things happen here. But what you guys gave me is a choice. You guys gave me a spiritual kit, toolkit, right, that you so graciously laid at my feet, and you gave me an option to pick that up and walk through things with my head held high with dignity and grace, or to leave it there and throw a temper tantrum, which I do a lot, and then pick it up and walk through things with dignity and grace. And that's the option that I've been given in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. So after her sponsoring me for 11 years, I hear a new voice who is now her sponsor. And what a gift, man. I have this sponsor named Sammy. She lives in Richmond. You know Sammy? It's just everything happens for a reason. She is like my AA story twin, and I never knew. We were both put together for a reason. I'll tell you guys one last story, and I'll shut up because I talk a lot and really fast, I know. I was about 4 years sober, and I was at a Big Book study, and I got a call that my parents and my youngest brother were in a car accident. A car hit them head on going 45 miles an hour, and the car's caught on fire, and my mom and my dad and my youngest brother were stuck in the car. And the guy behind them actually stopped and pulled them out of the car and saved their lives. It was my aunt calling me. And she said, Katie, your mom and dad are going, my little brother was fine. And she's like, Katie, your mom and dad are going into surgery. We don't know what's going to happen, but we'll call you and let you know. Whenever it was time for me to go home and be a service to my parents, that's what I did, because that's what you guys taught me, right? Because of Alcoholics Anonymous and because of what you guys taught me, my mom had broken both of her wrists from trying to brace herself. I'm sorry, both of her arms. She had cast up to here. I had the opportunity to feed my mother when she could not feed herself. My dad had a compound fractures in his legs from, I guess, trying to hit the brakes or whatever. And he had casts? I can't remember. But I had the opportunity to help my father walk when all he could do on his own was crawl. Because of Alcoholics Anonymous and because of what you all taught me here, I've had the opportunity to show my parents just this much of the unconditional love that they've been giving me my entire life. Thank you so much for having me.